Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Friar Faithful Chronicle podcast. I'm your host, Deegs, joined today again by Trevor Huth of Gaslamp Ball. Trevor, how's it going, man?
Good. Thanks for having me on again. I'm surprised you had me back after the first time.
Yeah, dude. I mean, we kind of just shot the shit a little bit after that first podcast, and hopefully this becomes a more consistent thing. We're going to just, you know, last episode that you were on, we primarily focus on some minor league prospects, you know, the depth of this system, highlighted some of the top end guys. Today we're going to talk about the big league club, and the big league club has been, you know, floated in a ton of rumors lately that have been going across the baseball interwebs. So we're going to get into some of that stuff. But before we do that, we're going to quickly just highlight one signing that we briefly touched on in last episode. That would be Drew Pomeranz. So for those of you that don't know or just, you know, somehow forgot, the Padres signed Drew Pomeranz this past offseason to a four-year, $34 million contract. The third year is a team option, so really it's only a three-year deal unless they choose to vest that team option. But I because obviously, Trevor, you're not a Padres fan, I want to hear an outsider's perspective on giving a guy who, you know, has been pretty much a below average to terrible pitcher ever since he was an all-star that one year in San Diego, so much money just because of the amount of success he had in 2 months as a reliever.
I mean, you're just paying him for that relief role. I mean, it's less than 30 innings. The amount of money seems weird, but also the Padres bullpen last year was, to be nice about it, less than ideal. So, you know, being able to get somebody who, even if it was just 30 innings, was, I mean, fantastic.
Yeah.
Struck out 50 guys and had an ERA, a sub-2 ERA overall. I mean, that's pretty good out of the bullpen. And if he can keep that going, then I think it'd be worth the money. I don't necessarily think it's a bad sign. I mean, to stay away from ERA to 1.92 FIP. So, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of money to pay for half a season, but or not even half a season, really. But I think that you're not asking him to, you know, be a closer and put him necessarily in those high leverage situations. But his starting history, maybe you can stretch him out and have him eat innings if the rotation's not going to be as strong as people think it is. And I think it's a decent move. I you know, as a reliever, I think it could work out well, and I don't see him in the rotation. He better not be in the rotation. But as a reliever, I think it could work out well.
Yeah, I mean, I think what stood out to me the most, you know, from when the Brewers acquired him was that jump in velocity. I mean, he was consistently throwing like absolute ched. And then how nasty his knuckle curve was in a relief role. Do you think that with this new proposed three batter minimum rule, that having guys like Pomeranz and just guys in the bullpen in general that can go multiple innings if need be, and can get guys out from both sides of the plate, whether they're left-handed or right-handed, do you think that's going to be more of a common theme that we'll see now that teams are going to start paying more money and valuing relievers that can, you know, get consistent outs over a longer stretch? Or is that rule just going to go away within a year or two? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this because a ton of people are very, you know, one-sided on this rule if they like it or not.
I mean, financially, I don't know how this is going to affect the relief market because, I mean, frankly, I'm surprised at what the players get. So I don't want to go ahead and project something like that and be way off because I will. But the value of having guys who can get outs, regardless of if it's, you know, lefty righty, if they're lefty righty, same side, different side, whatever, that's going to be extremely important when the three batter minimum comes in because, you know, if you want to add in the 26 roster spot into this theory too, then you're getting an extra batter potentially to play with. Where if you get a guy who excels against getting lefties out, but righties are hitting 500 off him with only bombs, I mean, you're just going to, you know, bring in the what the stats say you should. So I think that having a guy like Pomeranz who can get outs on both sides and you know, not have to worry about him getting tired after a bat or anything stupid like that. I think that it really does add value to him as a reliever. And as I'm looking at this, I just want to point out one stat that has nothing to do with the question you asked me. But as a starter last year,
he was terrible.
Pomerantz struck out 87 batters in 75 innings. As a reliever, 50 batters in 28.2 innings. I mean, that's a big difference in uptick and stuff there.
Yeah, he's never really had, you know, I mean, his last true, really quality season as a starter was when he was an all-star in San Diego the year that they traded him for Anderson Espinosa. But I don't know, man. It's interesting to see because you get a guy who comes back, you know, back home, back to a place where he kind of jump-started his career. And now, if you look at the back end of that bullpen, you give up, you get a lead with Pomeranz, Munoz, and Yates as your 7, 8, 9. And that's got to be one of the better 7, 8, 9s in the league, which is absolutely ridiculous to say that a guy who was just 4 years ago a starter and a guy who was a waiver pickup by the Padres now form a pretty formidable 1-2 punch in the back end of their bullpen. But
you know what, though, on that, where he had his good year in San Diego, that I don't know why, but that kind of stuff can matter, too. You look at Jeremy Jeffress in Milwaukee. He was terrible outside of Milwaukee, but he comes back, and he had all of his good seasons as a Brewer.
It's just a comfort thing. You know, guys just like to pitch at in certain parks. I think, you know, for Pomeranz specifically, going to Boston, you know, with that media and the pressure that it's like to pitch in Boston every single year and everyone's watching you, and we know what Boston fans are like. Shout out to Ralph Lifshitz. But like
prospect Jesus.
Yeah, like the organization gives up a top pitching prospect for you, you're definitely expected to perform. So I don't know, man. I hope it pans out just because, you know, I'm a Padres fan. But let's move on here. Enough of talking about Drew Pomeranz, who I hope is the next Andrew Miller, by the way. A guy that we were, you know, kind of chatting about on Twitter before this when we were planning about what we were going to talk about on this podcast is Matthew Boyd. Matthew Boyd of your Detroit Tigers, a guy who, you know, 28-year-old lefty, is going to be a free agent after the 2022 season. We're kind of thinking of hypothetical trade packages for, you know, what it would take for the Padres to acquire Matthew Boyd, who is a guy that they have been linked to, at least for the past couple seasons. So, first of all, give me kind of the breakdown on Matthew Boyd. I'm looking at his numbers here for the 2019 season. They're actually not too bad. You know, K per 9 of almost 12 is really interesting to me. The ERA and the FIP are kind of high, but I guess that's kind of just a byproduct of playing for one of the worst teams. Actually, the worst team in baseball last season. So, you know, just give me the breakdown on Matthew Boyd before we jump into any trade packages. Is he a number 3? Is he a number 4? What do you think?
Well, it depends. I mean, you look at first half, second half, it was really a tale of two seasons for Boyd. You know, in that second half, the wheels kind of fell off for him, which I think is why a trade for Matt Boyd is very likely not to happen in the offseason, because teams are going to be able to point to that and say, why would we trade so-and-so prospect for, you know, for that? But what he was in the first half of the season was overall, I mean, pretty solid. Had a 3.57 FIP in that first half of the season. Second half, that went up to 5.35. So he's kind of, again, he's going to strike out 11 batters per 9, and the walk numbers kind of hit him more in the second half. But yeah, I think he's absolutely a solid 3, and for a Brewers rotation that you're looking at right now, that I think is one major league average or more pitcher away from being almost lethal, especially when you talk about Gore probably in that rotation at some point in 2020. I think Matt Boyd is just a fantastic addition for them because he's controllable and fairly cheap at this point too. So I think that would be really interesting. And putting a package together is just, it's tough for me because I never know what's ridiculous, to be completely honest. But, you know, when the rumors of the Angels wanting Matt Boyd coming out, we were talking within our Bless You Boys chat that I'm a part of, and we kind of just all thought, hey, a Brandon Marsh is like the centerpiece of this deal. So if you want to think about what the Padres have that is Brandon Marsh-esque, because I don't think that you're going to be able to get a Gore, a Patino, a Trammell, or Trammell rather. Maybe a Campusano, if they would want a catching prospect, isn't too far out. I think that you could go with maybe an Owen Miller, Hudson Potts, Joey Cantillo type. I don't really know. I think they want a bat over a pitcher, even though you can never have enough pitching prospects. I think that they really lack with young bats. So I think that's what they would be looking for. And I think a guy like Owen Miller would really help out, because he's not, he's close enough to being ready.
What about a guy like, you know, potentially, because the Tigers, I know they have a ton of pitching prospects on the way up, but what about, you know, maybe a controllable back end guy like a Cal Quantrill and a Joey Lucchese with maybe, you know, Josh Naylor or Owen Miller packaged in there, and then like a lottery ticket 17-year-old guy like a Junior Perez or something. Do you think that's enough to get that done, or is Boyd really worth more than that?
I would think that's enough to get that done. But that's also me knowing this Padre system a little better than most Tiger fans. But yeah, no, I think that would be more than enough, because the Tigers don't really have anything that they can consider they don't really need.
Yeah.
They're not what I would call a good team. But they do have a farm system that has solid pitching on the way, and their solid hitting is just super young, it seems like. And I'm not going to lie, they have trouble developing those hitters. So getting a guy like, you know, Owen Miller or somebody up near the top who's almost ready, that would almost be better for him, I think, than getting a young guy like I don't know. I don't even know if I can use an example for this. Maybe Ornelas.
Okay.
And having to develop him, because it just – they don't have that track record yet, and that's scary to get a guy like that.
I want to kind of sidestep real quick, because there is some Padres news that just came out. Ian Kinsler is retiring, and he will be foregoing the $4 million left on his contract. They're going to work out a settlement, but Ian Kinsler is retiring and is going to be working in a front office role with the Padres. So that's fucking awesome, because Ian Kinsler is terrible. Anyway, how much more of a difference or an upgrade in your eyes is Matthew Boyd over a Joey Lucchese for next season? Because they're both guys that are kind of like more finesse lefties than overpowering lefties. Is Boyd ultimately what you hope Lucchese becomes potentially, or am I just mistaken in that department?
I think overall you're not too far off, but I think if you're looking to
win now,
go for it now, as the Padres seem to be with all the moves that they're making, I don't know that you're waiting to see if Lucchese becomes what you want him to, or if you can go get Boyd and still not drain your farm, which is ridiculously deep. I don't know that you should pass that up as the Padres. Again, I'm not sure that the Tigers are going to move Boyd right now. I know that Al Avila came out and said they're not looking to do that. They're not shopping Boyd, and you'll laugh at this, because they need Boyd to, quote, be a good team. But if you're the Padres, I mean, I think you got to at least make the call or find somebody else. There's a couple other pitchers obviously out there, but I mean, I think Boyd might be the most solid option, or the best value, I think, is the best way to put that, based on what's out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, Boyd doesn't really get it done for me, but if that's the guy that, you know, takes us from right now being an 84-win team and making us an 87-win team, pushing for a wild card spot, which I definitely think is possible if they do acquire another above-average starter.
Hey, look, he can make the Tigers a good team, so.
Yeah, I mean, according to evaluations within the Tigers organization, yeah, he can. So, I'll tell you what, though. A guy that does get it done for me and gets it done for me in a very, very big way is Mike Clevinger of the Cleveland Indians. This is a guy who I personally think is going to take that next step and be one of the best pitchers in baseball next season if he stays healthy. 28 years old, under contract through 2022, just like Matthew Boyd. You know, fantastic season last year with the Indians. 21 starts, 2.71 ERA. You know, in 126 innings, you have a 2.49 FIP, which is incredible to me. 12.07 K per nine. I mean, the guy was outstanding. Truly, truly took that next step once the Indians, you know, traded away Trevor Bauer and cemented himself as the top dog in that rotation. Now that Kluber is gone, you know, the Indians seem to be going kind of in this direction where they think that it's better off getting younger because they are a small market team. They can't seem to afford their big guys. And, you know, we'll obviously talk about Lindor later in this podcast. But if they were, you know, to just go full fire sale and trade off, obviously Kluber's gone, but trade off either Clevinger or Lindor, you're probably looking at a situation where they could rebuild without really having to go through a full rebuild, given their pretty deep farm system already. So, what are your thoughts on Clevinger first off as a pitcher? I just kind of want to hear what an American League Central fan thinks of Mike Clevinger on the mound.
I got a story about this one. So, my internship in college was for a radio station up in Detroit. And so I was covering the Tigers for them. Like, I had the press pass and everything. It was awesome. And, I go to one of the games. It's an Indians game, and Mike Clevinger's on the mound versus, I mean, who knows on the Tigers. It wasn't great, but, I'm just sitting there watching. This is a couple years ago too. So this is before, like, you know that they're bad, but like they aren't saying they're bad. Now they're saying they're bad. So I'm out there watching and you know, Clev's on the mound. I'm just thinking there's no, like, this guy's, he's probably just going to throw hard, walk a lot of guys. I mean, I've never even heard of this guy. I'm pretty sure he threw 8 shutout innings that day. So, and I'm sitting there watching amazed, like, this guy's got some skills. And so I'm a big Clevinger fan. Because he's talented, because you watch him pitch and you can tell he has more fun than everybody else. And I always love those guys. And he's smart. That's the thing that I like most about Trevor Bauer too. And those two were buddy buddies, is it's not just a game. It's they can be tactical and constantly working to be smarter and work at it as a craft, and they're more outward about it. And I think that's awesome. So I'm a huge Clevinger fan. That being said, both Clevinger or Lindor is going to cost a pretty penny for the Padres.
Well, yeah, I mean that it's definitely going to deplete. I wouldn't say deplete, because the Padres farm system is very rich and some might say never ending, but it's definitely going to put a massive dent in the farm system. I love Mike Clevinger, to be honest with you. I think just from a personality standpoint, you watch all the stuff he does on YouTube and the interviews he does. He's just a super, like, a high character guy, outgoing, super funny. And then when he gets on the mound, it's like 98 miles an hour with just a bunch of nasty stuff, a quirky delivery that there's just nothing like that in baseball, the way he, like, shakes his leg and stuff pre-pitch. But in terms of what it would take to get him, I think you're definitely forcing your hand here. I'm not going to say both, but one of Luis Patino or CJ Abrams has to be involved in that deal, right?
Absolutely. But the thing is, and this is where Padres Twitter seems to break off, and it's funny, but you build this farm system so you can win. So I mean, even as a prospect guy, I watch more minor league baseball than major league baseball. When you told me that we were going to be talking about major leagues, I asked you what the hell a Machado was. I mean, sell the farm if you have to. If Mike Clevinger's available or Francisco Lindor's available, yeah, I would absolutely be comfortable giving away one of the top prospects for them. because you're trying to win. You're not trying to, you know, I mean, having a good farm system is great, but it's to win. And if you have to trade him away to get the talent to win, then it's still serving its purpose. So, but yeah, you have to give away Patino, Abrams, maybe even Trammell. It might be impossible to do without giving up Gore. I don't know, but there's going to be some giant price tag on either one of them, especially because the Indians fan base is already probably mad and underwhelmed with the Kluber return.
And I feel like they kind of rightfully should be, you know, because what are your thoughts on that Kluber return? Because I feel like if you're going to, even though Corey Kluber is a guy who, and this kind of ties into the Padres because they were definitely in on Kluber from all accounts that I've heard and that we've seen on Twitter. But I think even though Kluber is on the downside, you know, last season he obviously struggled due to injury. It's not a stuff thing. He's just getting older, and his body is just more prone to injury as he gets older. But you get a fourth outfielder and a reliever that has had 20 successful innings at the big league level for a guy who, when he's healthy, even now is probably like a solid number three with really good number two upside. Just give me your thoughts on this Kluber return.
I mean, obviously they value the reliever. I know I always say his name. Is it Klaus?
Class A, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, but obviously they value him a lot, regardless of how you pronounce his name. They probably know how to pronounce his name too. So they obviously value him a lot to have him in that deal. And so, I mean, I think it's fine. He's a high velocity guy. The thing with DeShields, and I admittedly have not seen almost any of DeShields baseball ever, but as far as I know, I mean, he was a upside guy when he was a prospect.
Yeah, he was
wasn't
pick.
Just a fourth outfielder upside, as far as I know. And he's only, you know, 27 fourth outfielder right now, but I think it could turn out to be more. But no, it is underwhelming. I don't think it's as bad. I just don't think it's as bad as a lot of people are making it out to be, and that's my whole thing. It's not good. I think the Indians did bad, just not as bad as people think. So, you know, they value these guys well. It's good for them. They got what they wanted, and we'll see if they can get more from Lindor or Clevinger if they trade them away.
All right, before we go on to Lindor, because that's obviously the big one, hypotheticals here, okay? Let's assume that, and I have no proof of this. I have no idea. I'm just assuming. Let's assume that the Padres, because the Padres also have a high leverage 20-year-old that throws gas, just like Emmanuel Clase in Andrés Muñoz, and they have a fourth outfielder upside, just like Daniel DeShields was in Manuel Margot. So let's say that a package of Andrés Muñoz and Manuel Margot goes to the Indians for Kluber. Or the package that the Indians got, which is obviously Class A and DeShields. In your eyes, what's a better deal? This is easy for me.
I don't know. That's tough. I mean, I think it's really similar. I'd go Padres, but
I would
it's really similar. But and the reason I think I'd go Padres so easily is because I think Margot's got
yes.
more to him than yes. than DeShields does.
Yeah, I think Margot. I think there's a lot of people on this, on Twitter specifically, that are massively underrating Manuel Margot. I mean, he took very good strides last year. The numbers are not impressive at all. You know, 234, 304, 387 with a WRC plus below 100. The WAR close to 2, only because of his defense, but. There was a like 2 month stretch where he was consistently hitting the ball hard, getting on base at a high enough clip. This has never been a guy that has walked at the big league level, and his walk rate was up by close to a full 2.5% last year. I think there's a lot of people that, you know, don't realize that he's 25 years old because he's been at the big league since 2016. But obviously, the defense gives him a pretty safe floor, given the fact that he's one of the best defensive center fielders in the game. But give me an outsider's view on Manuel Margot. What are your thoughts on him? Does the bat ever come around, or is he a glove first, fourth outfielder that'll come in and play really good defense in the seventh inning.
He'll always be glove first, even if, you know, that's his thing, and that's fine. It's hard for me to – you keep saying outsiders. It's hard because I did write for Gaslamp Ball for a while, so I looked into these guys. So, I mean, I know – a lot. Like, as soon as you started talking about Manuel Margot, I pulled up his splits because they are, and I knew this, extremely interesting. You get into the month of July, he had a WRC plus of 132. In August, that carried over of 104. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the year, September, October, it's down to 39. I mean, just the streakiness in his monthly splits is ridiculous and amazing. And when he's on, it's because he can that hit tool comes around for him. When he's off, he's striking out 25%+ of the time. But I mean, that month of July, it was amazing. He walked 18% of the time, struck out 15% of the time, and he was good. So I don't know that he's ever going to have a consistent bat, but he's going to be a guy who can. I assume it'll get more consistent. It's got to get more consistent, but. I think he'll always be a glove-first guy and a guy who can do something. I don't know that he'll turn into an everyday starter, but his defense will definitely give him a shot. I mean, look how long Billy Hamilton was able to stick around as an everyday center fielder.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move on to, you know, we have two more topics to hit real quick, so we'll just get this one out of the way. Francisco Lindor, 26-year-old shortstop, free agent after the 2021 season. Ken Rosenthal came out last night and said that the Indians reportedly are telling interested teams to submit their best final offers for Lindor this weekend, and that they will evaluate over the course of the weekend, and potentially a deal could get done Monday or Tuesday if they feel like they're receiving the correct compensation. There's been a lot of, you know, people on Twitter and not just Padres Twitter, mostly Padres Twitter, because Padres Twitter is a cesspool, but a bunch of guys and people giving their takes on Lindor. Some people, you know, don't want him on the Padres. Some people don't want to sell the farm for 2 years, you know, just for one player. Some people don't want him to play shortstop because it means Tatis has to move over to center field, even though I don't see a reason why Francisco Lindor couldn't play second base, but that's just me. So what are your thoughts? Obviously, we don't have to talk about Francisco Lindor. He's probably the best shortstop in baseball, phenomenal player, definitely a top 10 player in the whole game. But what are your thoughts on a potential Lindor acquisition? You know, obviously the return would be massive. The haul would be massive for Francisco Lindor. So should the Padres, you know, break the bank for a guy who is only going to be with the team for 2 years and is probably going to be making upwards of $25 million in arbitration after next season, or should they just stand pat and do nothing? What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, get Lindor if you can get Lindor.
100%.
2 years of Lindor is you know. Get Lindor. And if your argument is, but who's going to play shortstop, or what do you do with Tatis? I don't know. I mean, have him pitch. I don't care. But having a lineup with Machado, Tatis, and Lindor, and having a defense with those, I mean, it would be ridiculous. And by the way, when I said have him pitch, I don't want anybody being like, oh, they said he should pitch. He should not pitch. But the point is, there will be space for him. Doesn't matter. But it's just I'm just looking at Padres prospects on, as you know, all lists, your lists, pipeline, whatever, and I'm just thinking to myself that with his split, and this is just for a popular opinion type vote, but for as split as people are on Trammell, you could almost try to center the deal around him potentially.
I would trade him
a guy like Weathers, who's still a top 10 guy in a good system, even though he's people have split opinions on him. You can do something like that, and that's two really good prospects already, and things are still not that torn apart.
I love Tito Trammell. Okay?
Oh, so do I.
I love the athletic, toolsy outfielders. We talked about this the other day. But I would trade him in a heartbeat if it meant, for instance, like if if you had to give me the option to center a deal around Patino, Abrams, or Trammell, because those are 2, 3, 4 in universally every single Padres system. You could probably throw Camposano in there as an argument for 4, but right now it's pretty much Patino, Trammell, Abrams. I would trade Taylor Trammell over any of those two guys. I wouldn't even think twice about it because I feel like he is definitely the higher risk of those three guys. That being said, I tweeted this the other day or last night. Okay, a poll on the Friar Faithful Chronicle Twitter account. I said, who says no? So the Padres get Francisco Lindor, and the Indians get C.J. Abrams, Adrian Morejon, Cal Quantrill, Manuel Margot, and cash considerations. Okay, in your eyes, is that enough to get that deal done, or does there need to be more? Because they're getting, you know, ultimately C.J. Abrams, who's going to be a top 50 prospect, probably top 25 in all of baseball next year. You get Adrian Morejon, who's a high upside lefty. If he stays healthy, he's got nasty stuff. You get Cal Quantrill to slide right into your rotation. And with the player development from the pitching side that the Indians have done in the past 3 years, I have no reason to believe that Cal Quantrill wouldn't thrive there. And you get Manuel Margot, who, like I said, fits a need for them in that outfield. So does that get that done, or does there have to be more?
I mean, I think that would get that done. It's just so funny because I was just looking at this, and again, I mentioned Trammell and Weathers, and I know how you feel about Ryan Weathers, but I was just thinking that a Trammell, Weathers, and even Morejon or another one of those young guys who's got the upside and has major league experience, they can plug right in. I mean, just that kind of thing. It's just going to have to be a few top-end guys. But the Padres have enough top-end guys that it really – you can give a couple away and still barely notice it. I mean, I think it's going to be tough for the Padres to want to part with C.J. Abrams.
Yes. That's the one because, I mean – it's going to be tough for them to move on from Patino or Abrams because, you know, Patino, they have been very clear on how they want to keep Patino and Gore together for the foreseeable future and have those two guys headline their rotation for the next 6 years. And then C.J. Abrams, you have a guy like that who was, you know, their first round pick, top 10 pick in the draft, who had the pro debut that he had, hitting 400 and had a 25 game hitting streak in the Arizona Rookie League.
You bought low on Trammell, honestly. Yeah.
Okay, you bought low on Trammell. Do you sell high on Abrams? Do you believe that C.J. Abrams is a everyday first division major league middle infielder? Because if you don't, then I think you have to sell high on him. I mean, there is no better way to start your professional debut than to literally hit above 400 and have a 25-game hitting streak.
Yeah. So what you're saying is we could do this for about another hour. Just go back and forth on what piece do you want to give away?
Here's the thing, though. I don't think that – okay, so take my trade proposal. Abrams, Morejon, Quantrill, Margot. If you replace Abrams with Trammell, I don't think the Indians take that deal. Because I firmly believe that organizations across baseball probably value Abrams more than Trammell. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think you would be right, just because you're talking about a guy who was just a first-round pick and had this amazing debut. But also, if you want to – my only thing with Trammell over Abrams is the fact that, one, if you saw what – the Padres are doing with Trammell, you're seeing a very big change that really benefited him. And I don't think it was just a hot streak to end the season. I think that watching what he did mechanically, that's going to last. I mentioned that last podcast. And he's also, I mean, he's closer.
He's closer. That's the thing. Yeah, he is closer.
So if you're talking about the Indians who are going to try to rebuild but not rebuild, they might value somebody who could be good, who has the all-star potential of Trammell and is closer. Because Abrams is still fairly far away, despite his solid.
We won't see him until 2023, probably.
Yeah, right. And Trammell's gonna start in AAA next year, I would imagine.
Okay. Now, last hypothetical here, right? Because we could legitimately do this for hours. take the same exact trade package I gave you. Okay. Take out Abrams and put Camposano in. How does that change the deal? it's a trade centered around Camposano, because the Indians, their catcher last year, I believe it was Roberto Perez, had a fairly good offensive season, but that is a guy who is has always been a glove first, bat second guy. And I, not that I'm aware of, I don't think they have any significant catching prospects coming up behind them. So Camposano's probably ready in 21, probably the end of 21, definitely ready to take over as a starter in 22. How does that change the deal?
I don't think they do that with Camposano there.
I don't think they do either. I think it has to be Abrams or Patino.
Because, one, they have Bo Naylor, who in their not arguably system that's worse than the Padres system, Bo Naylor's their number five prospect. I'm just going off pipeline because that's what I had open. But they do have somebody there. They have their catchers, but honestly, I wouldn't even want to do that as a Padres fan, because if we're going to take their Francisco Mejia catching prospect and give them a Camposano catching prospect, yeah, in the end, I'm going to look back and think, well,
yeah, even if they're in the same
trade, I'm going to look back and think, well, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it has to be Abrams or Patino. Who would you rather deal, Abrams or Patino, if you're the Padres, knowing that you want to compete sooner rather than later?
I almost would lean Patino.
You would rather deal Patino. That's interesting. Does that have to do with how loaded the system is with pitching?
Yes.
Okay.
100%. Okay. Because you have Gore, and you think about the young guys that are already up. I mean, you're not going to have necessarily another Luis Patino. I'm not saying that. But when you have Paddock up there already, Gore's almost there. Morhan, potentially Weathers.
Nelson Lamet is, I think, what you want Patino to be. Just a controlled version. Lamet's slider
is nuts. I loved watching that. I watched his
he's disgusting.
Rehab start, and I was like, his slider's still nuts.
Nobody talks about him enough, in my opinion. I think Nelson Lamet is one of the more underrated starters in baseball. He doesn't know how to throw a strike half the time, but he throws like 98, and his slider is disgusting. Like, he struck out 14 Mariners this year, and I know the Mariners are terrible, but it was one of the most impressive starts I saw all season. He was really good last year. So ultimately, I think Lamet, despite the fact that he's 27 years old, is what you want Patino to be.
But you can have Paddock, Gore, Lamet. I know you're going to hate me for saying this, but Weathers, because I think Weathers is just a floor back end guy.
I think Weathers is
Cantillo. That's just five names right there.
Yeah, you still have Morahone, you have Baez too. They'll probably find some 17-year-old Dominican this year, and then he'll turn into a top prospect in four seasons, because that's just what Preller does. But
I'm excited for Patino, and I think he's going to be fantastic. But if in terms of, can you survive more without another pitching arm, a potential high-level pitching arm or a potential solid bat? I mean, I don't know. I think you have the depth to survive a pitching blow more than a hitting blow.
I agree. It's just hard to, move on from a guy like Patino, given the fact that he's electric. It's just so fun to watch the kid pitch, and obviously you want that guy to be in a Padres uniform, which is why I think, Padres Twitter and that collective group, honestly, most of Padres fans don't want to acquire Lindor, given the fact that he's only on a 2-year contract. But it comes down to this: you build the farm system, to, one, have homegrown talent, but two, to deal away homegrown talent to go out and win. There's no point in hoarding a bunch of prospects when a superstar becomes available and you have the opportunity to go get him. I think you kind of have to do that, which is definitely something that we could both agree upon. But let's move on to our final topic of the day here, the catching situation for the Padres. So as of right now, Austin Allen's gone. So the depth chart looks like it's going to be a combination or some assortment of Austin Hedges and Francisco Mejia. There have been several reports that the Padres are inclined to upgrade catching. I don't know what that means, because I don't really see how many catchers, one, will be available this year on the market, and two, that present a clear-cut upgrade outside of the only guy I can think of is Wilson Contreras, if they want to tap into that market and acquire him from the Cubs. But You look at what it is right now. It's a clear cut two guys that are complete polar opposites of each other. Austin Hedges is a glove first backstop, arguably the best defensive catcher in all of baseball. The guy's a wizard behind the plate, but he doesn't know what the hell he's doing offensively. I mean, it is so bad. And then you go to Francisco Mejia, switch hitting catcher, you know, young, controllable guy, was arguably the team's best hitter down the stretch the last 2 months of the season last season. Kind of a free swinger, but he's still pretty young. Hits for power, hits for contact. But defensively, there's times where he looks lost. And I have seen several evaluators say that they don't think that he can stick there long term. So a question that you posed to me before the podcast was, you know, potentially Mejia moving around to see where he could play, you know, to get his bat in the lineup and still, you know, keep Hedges' glove behind the plate. This is a situation where I think the DH would be optimal. Because, you know, you could DH Mejia and obviously still have that production that Hedges gives you behind the plate. Because there's no surprise, the numbers are there, that last season with Hedges behind the dish, the Padres pitchers had more success. So let's talk about that real quick. Do you think one of these guys does get moved? Because I think they both present equal value, even though Hedges gives you nothing at the plate. His glove is going to play pretty much every single day. I don't think he is a Martin Maldonado type catcher where he's just a backup. He's just that special with the glove. So what are your thoughts on these two prospects, or not prospects, players individually, and how they fit into this team?
Just so used to prospects, I guess. Yeah. I'm a big Mejia guy. From a fantasy baseball standpoint, I'm purchasing so much Mejia stock because nobody picks him. So you're getting a solid offensive catcher late because people don't know what his playing time is going to be. But honestly, I think his versatility in a real baseball world, not a fantasy baseball world, I think his versatility means a lot to you if you're the Padres, because you don't have to have Austin Hedges catch necessarily every day. You can split him with Mejia, and then if you want Hedges to catch, you can put Mejia somewhere else. I know he worked in the outfield in the minors. You know, depending on there, I just, you can find a spot necessary on that field, I think, for him. DH might be optimal, but I think his bat and for lack of a better term, we'll call it defensive versatility. I know he's not a great defender, but he can technically stand out at a lot of different positions, and he has done that. So I think that's really interesting. And I was seeing on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, but it's talking about the 26th roster spot being carrying a third technical third catcher to be a true backup. But then you can have Mejia moving around, and that gives you some solid depth there, or at least have somebody that you can, you know, call up and down to fill that. I mean, I think it's interesting. But Mejia gives Tingler a lot to think about, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the Indians try him at third base. We saw him, you know, get some work in the outfield. So Mejia's very athletic. I think, you know, he could definitely probably play a corner outfield spot with enough seasoning, given the fact that he has an absolute cannon for an arm. One thing I've actually seen thrown around is potentially trying him at second base, given the fact that, you know, we don't really have anybody at second base. I don't really know how that would fit in, but definitely something that Tingler, you know, maybe they'll contemplate, maybe they don't, I don't know. But I think it's a pretty sticky situation, because I don't think it's necessary to go out and get a guy like Wilson Contreras and most certainly deal Mejia to go get a guy like Wilson Contreras on top of the other prospects you have to give up. But I think that rolling Hedges out for 120 games every single year, or however many games he's going to play, is definitely a detriment to this offense, and it's going to keep them, you know, from getting where they want to be, which is being one of the better offenses in baseball.
And, I mean, as of right now, if we're going to talk about him in the outfield, you look, you have Pham who will be in the outfield, Grisham will be in the outfield, and then you have, what, Myers, Naylor, Margot.
Cordero, Franchy Cordero's there.
Do you really think that those guys are going to be enough to not give Mejia a chance if they're not hitting, which, let's be honest with ourselves, is probably going to happen?
Here's the thing. I think there's no chance that – well, one, I don't believe Will Myers is going to be on their opening day roster 2020. But if he is, I don't think that there's a chance that they relegate him to a platoon role to at least start the 2020 season, given the fact that he's going to be making $20 million. So I think that at that point, Myers is your everyday right fielder until he truly starts to suck, which is going to happen because he just doesn't have it anymore. But that's what we saw last year, too. I mean, he was starting pretty much every game. He got hurt, came back, played, and then he was the last 2 months of the year, he was a platoon guy. So I don't know. We'll have to see. I personally, Josh Naylor intrigues me. You know, the bat is special, I think, for a guy who presumably would be our first baseman of the future if Eric Hosmer wasn't there, unfortunately. But, you know, the defense with Naylor, it's improved, and he's a pretty good athlete given how big he is. He's lost a lot of weight too, but he's still never going to be more than an average defensive player. So you're just going to have to see what happens. We'll see what they do in spring training. Obviously, if they trade one of these two guys, then none of this matters because the other is just going to be the full-time catcher. But you also have to think about this. Luis Camposano is not too far away, and this system is loaded at catcher depth. Luis Torrens is probably big league ready. He was in Double A all of last year, had a really good season at the plate. He's probably always going to be a glove first guy, but he looked pretty solid. You know, like I mentioned, Camposano's not too far away. Blake Hunt is not, you know, he's going to be in Lake Elsinore next season. And then you have Logan Driscoll, who they just drafted, who's probably not a catcher moving forward, but there's just a ton of
advanced though on Driscoll.
What?
I know he's a college bat, but he surprised me. He seemed pretty advanced for a fresh drafty.
Yeah, I mean, there's reason to believe that there's something there. I mean, they wasted a third-round pick on him, so you would hope that there's something. I think he profiles more to me as a corner guy. I don't know if he'll stay down at as a catcher more. You're probably looking at a guy who's going to move over to first base at some point. But, I mean, he's intriguing. So
he's not getting ahead of the guys you named before him either on the catching depth chart.
No. I think right now it's probably Camposano, Torrens, Hunt, Driscoll is how I would line it up. But we'll have to see. I think, you know, they view Camposano as their guy of the future, and rightfully so. But also, I want to see what he does at Double A. Can he, you know, continue that offensive production, show us that approach against real quality pitching before I make any assessment on him, you know?
No, yeah, he can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, for your sake, I hope so, because you proclaimed him as one of the best offensive catchers in baseball over the next
five years. You agreed.
I did agree. Yeah, I agree. I like Camposano a lot, and the fact that he could probably squat the house really makes it better. So,
and that swing plays. You watch the video, that swing plays. I think as long as his approach is fine, that swing will play at Double A.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, I hope so. But I think that's all we have today, man. Thanks for coming on the show. You know, as always. It was fun talking, you know, just kind of shooting the shit, talking some Padres stuff with you today. But yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. You have a good holidays. You know, we'll probably be on here again sometime before Christmas rolls around. But thanks for listening. Have a good one.